Good morning. Welcome to episode 39 of the Driller Newscast, brought to you by Derricks Incorporated. Based in High River, Alberta, Derricks manufactures exceptional dual rotary drilling rigs for the whole world. And that's H-O-L-E, everyone. Using our many years of drilling experience, we have engineered the perfect drilling rigs for your water well, geothermal, and reverse circulation exploration projects. Our customer service and technical assistance are second to none, as we take great pride in customer satisfaction. Your success is our success. Stop by the Derricks booth and say hello. This week's episode, we feature groundwater professional Mike Steffen of Steffen Water Well Drilling, who talks about utilizing dual rotary in his area of Formosa, Ontario. Our main story of the week is a discussion with Dave Schollenberg about his presentation at NGWA titled From Well Digger to Groundwater Professional: Perceptions to Reality. This week's safety is simple. We just ended a holiday weekend, and in a week, starting Tuesday, December 6th, we're going to be in Las Vegas at the National Water and Geothermal Show. Like I said, simple safety this week. Let's focus on the task at hand. And when our team seems distracted because they're thinking of those bright lights and big city, it's time to stop work and get everybody refocused. This is our featured industry professional section of the Driller Newscast, and we have a returning guest, a Canadian water well driller. We don't get to talk to a lot of those guys. I'm surprised the internet is working up there. Just kidding.
It's working all right.
So I have with me Mike Steffen of Steffen Water Well. Go ahead and introduce yourself, Mike. How long have you been drilling? What type of rigs have you run?
I've been drilling since 2005-ish. Or I've been in the industry. Started as a helper. Types of rigs. Started on a Gardner Denver 15W. 14W, and they had DR12 and a 24. Oh, what else they have at the time? Great big SRAM, but I don't know whatever happened to it. And then they bought a new V2000 Versadrill.
Excellent.
And then that company had a couple other rigs, ended up with a really big, like a T130 SRAM. And then I left and worked for another company, ran a 2400 Bosiris, and then a 10R on my own, and a 450 SRAM, and then a Derricks 1340 dual rotary.
And that's what I want to talk to you about today, is dual rotary. I remember last year at the Nashville National Groundwater Show, there was a new rig there. And I had heard it was heading to your business across the border. And you took that rig off the truck it was on and put it on your own truck about 11 months ago. How did you do that? Tell us the story.
Yeah, that's the rig that was at the show last year I'd purchased. And the delivered it up here, and it got up here about 8:30 on a Friday night, and myself and a couple of buddies and a couple employees, we were about 1:30 in the morning. We drove the Peterbilt out from under it and loaded on the trailer the next day and sent it back to Western Canada, and then we put a real nice international underneath the rig.
How many hours are on that rig now?
As of yesterday afternoon, I got 702 hours on the rig. Now, some of them are developing or just sitting there, you know, the rig idling, but just over 700.
Obviously, we're all on the Groundwater Professionals Facebook page and the Water Well Guys Facebook page, and we see photos from time to time. And when I first met you, I was up there pedaling some other rigs out of Oklahoma, and were refurbishing and building, you know, on your own rig, and now you're doing dual rotary, where you were mud rotary and air. How has that changed your business?
It's changed my business greatly. In tough overburden, dual rotary is definitely nice, especially in the 6-inch market, like domestics. The Derricks is a fairly compact drill rig, so I think it's about 26 feet long or so overall. It's really easy in a nice tight spots. I really like the rig. They've, it's pretty relatively simple work. One thing about dual rotary I really like is when you're sampling the overburden, especially if you come into some sand and gravel, if it's water bearing at all, you know right away there's no spending time putting casing and a screen in to find out that, yeah, well, the gravel looked good and it drank, but it was still dry.
Well, that's what I wanted to ask you. So, Ontario and Michigan and many of the Great Lakes states and Great Lakes, Canadian land has a lot of overburden, a lot of sand and gravel drift. Big chunks of ice came through and made all those Great Lakes. Explain to us the difference between dual rotary and mud rotary. You know, for the guys that are out there just running straight mud like you were, walk us through the process.
Well, mud rotary, so you got your drill rig, you set up your mud pan, shaker system, whatever your choice is. And you drill down to the formation you're looking for, whether it be sand or gravel or your bedrock in the area. Get your fluid nice and clean, hole stabilized, pull the rods out, install casing. Again, whether you're putting your 4-inch plastic in with a screen on the end, or if you're, going to limestone, granite, whatever the case may be, then you're, grouting the annular space, and then you're either developing the formation or you're going into drill rock. With dual rotary being you're advancing your casing right off the hop, it's pretty nice because those days you hit those nice big boulders and you're sure that's bedrock, get your casing set, drill 2 feet out the bottom and finds out that it was just a big boulder. With mud rotary, you're now pulling your casing or having to line it. Dual rotary, just weld some more casing on, keep going. It'll chew through the rock. Don't worry about it. So a lot of times with mud rotary where you're maybe a little stressed at the back of the rig because things aren't going well, dual rotary eliminates a lot of it.
How about development time? How is that compared to mud rotary?
For limestone and granite, I don't think there's really any difference, but when you're into sand and gravel formations, well, the greatest part is you don't have any drill mud to get out of the formation. So, I mean, obviously there's still development to get your grain sizes where you want and your screen installed, but you eliminate mud out of the formation. So it sure makes developing a lot faster.
So where you would traditionally have run PVC, now you're running 6-inch steel?
We generally always ran steel. We do install some PVC, but generally we've always installed steel. Lots of areas run PVC, but just not here.
So your customers have been used to always having steel wells in your area?
Yes, it's pretty much been steel since cable tools showed up.
How many wells have you done this year? Has it been a good year for you?
Yeah, it's been a good year. I think we're just under 100. We'll get over 100, I'm sure, this year yet.
But you're going to take some time and come out to the Vegas show and, share some knowledge and talk some dual rotary?
Yeah, I'm share what I can, and hopefully I'll learn a few things while I'm there and meet some of the fellas on the Facebook page.
Excellent. Well, I appreciate your time today, Mike. I know you're a busy guy and you just come home from being in the field, and it's You got family and lots of other stuff going on. So I appreciate you coming on and sharing from pulling a rig off a truck, which we don't hear a lot about, putting it on your own truck and going out and putting 700 hours on it.
Well, thanks for having me, Rock.
I'll see you in Las Vegas.
Sounds good, bud.
Thanks. Hi, welcome to the Driller Newscast. We're prepping for the National Groundwater Conference, and I'm very excited because today I have Dave Schulenberg with me, who is director of partner states for seven states for groundwater associations, including my home state of Michigan. And Dave has presented in the past at NGWA, and we'll get into that with him. But I saw this presentation title and I went, man, I got to see this one. And as I'm checking my list of what I want to look at and participate with, this one, I'm 100% sitting in the front row, and it's called Digger, Driller, or Groundwater Professional. What is the public perception of you and the work you do, and how do we address it? And I want you to think about that, because the public perception is well water. I wish I had municipal water. Very rarely do we hear, I got a well. It's mine. I protect it. Nobody else has anything to control it with. So I'm going to open it up. Good morning, Dave. How are you doing?
I'm well, Brock. Thank you for having me on. I'm excited to be here and talk about our industry again in a new way, and one that I think needs to be addressed not only by all of our groundwater professionals, but with regulatory agencies as well. And that's kind of that perception angle that I want to talk about a little bit too.
And we've caught Dave. He's about to walk out the door and go to deer camp, you know, so here I am in the studio working away, making sure you folks have the information we need for the NGWA, when at the same time I have buck fever and I'm thinking about, man, I need to get to the field. So
that's right. That's
first
right.
First question. So,
yes, sir.
Seven states, with seven California states. Yep. Being your westernmost state. And I guess that's, I would correct. Say, what, Michigan?
Michigan, Kentucky rank right up there about the farthest east. I take care of Minnesota, Michigan, and Montana, California, Illinois, Kentucky, and Kansas. So I go, you know, the winter months I spend up north here in the tundra and travel around and really enjoy every one of the groundwater professionals that I meet in every one of those states. Some of them are newer, and I'm still getting to know each and every one of them. And some of them I've been with for a couple of decades now, and consider them family. It's fun to sit and watch a board member take the gavel as president and realize that he or she may have been one of the first scholarship recipients when I had first started, or that they were just leaving junior high. So again, I date myself. I feel old. You know, I've got my walker behind me, but I've been with these individuals and these professionals that it's really become like family with everybody. And that's one of the things I enjoy.
So with seven states, you have a pretty good cross-section of what's happening with water legislation, with different types of drilling companies, from California paving the way on Tier 4 and equipment expectations to the drought. And then as we move, you know, farther east, you know, we got a lot of places. It's Great Lakes states, man, it's easy to get water. So you must hear a lot of different opinions.
It is. There's a lot of different opinions. There's a lot of different things that go on with it. And there's a lot of different perceptions versus reality, not only within our industry, but also within and from each state. You know, there's the drought, and everyone's aware of the drought out in California, but that drought also touches parts of Minnesota and Kansas. And what do we do with our aquifers in those states? What about up in Montana? PFAS is becoming something more and more that is being looked at, not only in states such as Michigan and Minnesota, but Kentucky. And they have to make sure that as a groundwater industry, they are staying up on what any kind of possible regulations are that come out of agency, as well as what it is that those professionals in those states need to know about PFAS. And so, you know, you mentioned that I've spoken at National a couple times, one of which was on PFAS. The other one has been on the relationship between the association leader and the board president. And really a lot of that ties together on what is the perception of our industry. And that's what I wanted to touch on with this presentation, because I have the experience of dealing with seven states, with seven different agencies or more, because in some states there's multiple state agencies that touch groundwater. I often have to remind agency members, employees, that they are working with groundwater professionals. You know, when I'm with them out on a site and they say, well, how do you dig the well? It's like, no, we don't dig. There's no shovels. We drill. These are not diggers. They're not drillers. They're groundwater professionals. And, you know, I mentioned that with everything. And I've mentioned it multiple times. Everything that a groundwater professional needs to know to do their job puts them up above the digger or the driller. And we have to continue to remember that and to expound that in every conversation we have with other members, with other professionals, with agencies, et cetera. As a groundwater professional, you have to understand hydrology, geology, plumbing methods, electronics. You have to know your state regulations. You may have to be licensed. You have to know how to run a business. And so it's more than just standing on the back of that rig and going, I'm going to pull the lever. I can feel what's going on. It's an industry that is just as professional and needs to be seen just as professional as any other trade association in this country. And it's even more important because we're the ones that bring water. And everybody needs that water. And so, I mean, there's a lot that has to go on when we deal with items and this conversation. So
it's very interesting because you're absolutely right. Growing up in the business, starting with cable tool and moving up into rotary, and then, you know, working for some big manufacturers, I've got the opportunity to see water not only in the States but around the world. And we know from the cost and the stakes of being groundwater professionals and drillers, the cost. Yeah. You know, it's Thanksgiving's coming up. Deer season's happening right now. And if that dairy farm goes down or that home, you know, it's winter, we need to get there right now. And we need to be able to get them supported and get them back online.
That's correct.
Groundwater professionals, we're doing water treatment now. We're doing, you know, major plumbing systems that, you know, maybe you're running into an RO system for, you know, some sort of recreation with swimming pools or whatnot. There's so many aspects that we touch outside of just running a hole in the ground, throwing some casing and a pump in it. So it's great to hear this conversation.
Yep. Yeah, there's a lot that the public fails to recognize, you know, that the professional is also the family man, but they're the professionals and they'll go out and they'll help whenever they can and whenever they need to.
I couldn't agree more. So with seven states, what are some of the hot button topics that you have coming up for 2023?
In a couple of the states, the most recent state election, you know, the midterm elections at the state level have now provided some additional challenges in trying to get away from a state level control of the water and realizing that individuals within the states have water rights, to also areas such as that California deals with, not only continuing with CARB, but the electric engine or the electric vehicle mandates. The fact that wells are going dry, but yet you still have to irrigate, you still have to use it. You're dealing with decades old water laws and treaties and compromises, Mother Nature, to some that are very much more focused in their issues. You know, Montana might deal with something that's very Montana-centric. Kentucky, there's not a whole lot going on this year, so we're not going to have to worry about something. Might be the case in that aspect. In some of the states, I'm seeing the need for opening up parts of the code to say, should this be licensed? Should this not be licensed? When you're talking about pump installer licensure, you know, should there be a license for it? Shouldn't there be a license for it? So a lot of it is very state centric, but there are things that can carry on from one state to another state. The recent cement issue where it went from a Portland type 1 to a Portland type 1L hit a number of states in different ways. Some of the states that I represent, it wasn't a problem because it wasn't codified in their code or statute that it had to be Portland type 1. It just said cement. So a number of the states were able to provide a variance or change it, or they didn't have to address it at all because it wasn't an issue. And so by having some of these different states and across the country, it allows me to say, I'm seeing this in one state, we should be aware of it in another state. You know, somebody wants to take, you know, tanker train loads full of water from a pristine aquifer and ship it down to Arizona. Okay, we got to be aware of that, what's going on up here, down there. Kind of what we talked about earlier from piping the river from Missouri or Mississippi out west. That's a 99-cent Band-Aid effect for a cut. And you know what a 99-cent Band-Aid does? It comes off real easy and is worthless.
What's great, the points you've just made. First, Kentucky. You know, massive flooding this year in Kentucky.
Yep.
Which impacted local water supplies all over the place, where they had to bring in some unique technologies because folks just couldn't get water.
Yeah.
To multiple water districts in Kentucky from either reservoir repair or from drought, ran out of water.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so we have covered those things on the news. And you talk about trucking water, or you know, Nebraska is building a canal from Colorado for the South River Platte Compact. And these compacts are a century old.
Yeah.
You know, and so we got Nebraska, Colorado fighting. We got Southern Oregon, Northern California fighting over, you know, water. We got Florida and Georgia. It's like you said, there is no boundaries. You know, it's funny. A few years ago in college, at the time, Michigan was the Michigan Department of Environmental Quality. Yep. An individual stood up in the front of the room and said, you know, groundwater is almost like a deer. You know, it's going to have a great big circumference. And, you know, all the moments went, wait, no, you know, it's not quite like that, but it affects ecosystems. It affects commerce. It affects agriculture. It affects recreation.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, as consumers, we take the least amount of the water to, you know, be sustainable.
Right.
It's all the rest of it.
Right. You know, NGWA has these fact sheets from all the states and everything that shows what the percentage of the usable groundwater is for irrigation, industry, and consumptive use. And, you know, that is always something that can be an eye opener when you're talking to people is, you know, look, this, the data is 2016. I get it. It's not yesterday's data. It doesn't work that way, but it doesn't change that much either when you're talking about the fact that depending on where you are, you know, Nebraska, Kansas, Oklahoma, their use of water will be higher for irrigation than it would be in Maine or Connecticut. You know, they would be higher with their industrial use or their consumptive use. And knowing how that affects and knowing how your state reacts when you're talking about water law, and what it is that may be codified into code for domestic use. And, you know, some states have a priority of use for your water. And so somebody might say, oh, I've got it, I can't use all that water, or you can't. It's like, no, I can. I'm number one in line, you know, this is not the place to get into a discussion, God, about water law, because once you go outside your door, it's different all over the place. You know, whether you have senior water rights, you have junior water rights, whether you sold it, whether it's, you know, there's books written on that. What was it? I think Ben Franklin said, whiskey's for drinking and water's for fighting, or something like that. I think it's how it goes. 10, 20 years ago, it was a cute comment, you know. Now, yeah, it's becoming more and more volatile. So to understand it and understand how our professionals affect it and how they can continue to affect it inside their own zone of influence is important. And if you're a digger, if you're a driller, reach to that next level, reach to being that professional, so someone can call up and say, you know what, Brock, you're the groundwater professional around here. I need to ask you a question about this. You know, you're the one who handles it. You know where the geology affects the hydrology, what I can and what you can't do, you know, that kind of thing. And so having that level of acumen and recognition of being recognized at that level is huge for our industry. And we need to continue to start changing it.
And that's a great point. And we'll get wrapped up. You're very right. You know, from a customer standpoint, from a legacy of a business, but as you talked about the law and the legislation, and we look at what the Department of Interior has stepped in to do with the Groundwater Compact, what we're seeing with the Ogallala, you know, across the country, the determining factors. And when you have large governing bodies looking at who's the right individual that's responsible enough to be punching in through that confining layer into that pristine groundwater, we need to be shown that we've been doing it for a century safely, right, and smartly. And we'll continue to do it with the best practices and technologies and camaraderie of associations that, right, we are the right men and women to be doing it.
Right. You know, I don't want to say that agency is ever wrong. I know a lot of people have a certain view on regulatory agencies. I have heard comments for many years. The agency will always say, well, this is the way the book does it. And we'll say, but this is the way it has to happen. And we need to somehow educate agency members who sometimes may be in a position because they work for that agency. I work for the Kentucky Department of Health and Environment. Okay, well, you know what? There's a new position open up in well. I think I'm going to go for that. You don't have any experience in well, but yet because you work for KDHE, you could move over there. And KDHE, if you're listening, I'm just picking on you just because it came to mind. But you can see where some of that will happen in any state. And so really to have the association or the local professional come and say, come out and spend a half a day at a job site so I can show you what it is. We'll do two things. It'll show them that the agency or that the association and the professional are just that, professionals. And it'll help the agency go, there's no stupid questions here today, I hope. I have a question about what does this lever do? How is it that you know this? What is it that you understand this? I spent a day, 2 or 3 hours with some agency members here in the metro area. And to be able to tell them and get them to understand that the professional on the back of that rig can understand and know what layers of soil and geology he's going through just by feeling the vibrations of the machine. It blew their mind. He says, I know when I hit a pocket. I know when I hit this. I know when I hit this, just by how the machine vibrates as it's going through. And they were like, mind blown. But that's the level of professionalism we have to keep saying, of passing on, of getting understood. I know drillers can do that too. I'm just saying, digger, driller, groundwater professional, what is that perception that you're throwing out there? Because it's received, and that image is received in multiple different ways.
Well, I hope you do a part two to this that is groundwater professional, regulator, scientist. And I'm very proud to hear that, you know, we have an incoming president that is a scientist.
Right.
For the NGWA. It is showing the growth. This will be our second scientist, right?
It'll be our second scientist after Scott King, I believe. Yep. Jason House is next up, I believe, for NGWA presidency. And if there's a part two that I could do either at NGWA, a groundwater week that talks about the relationship between agency, scientist, engineer, this can also be done locally by people that are not myself or you, but at association levels, to reach out to that scientist and engineer side of it and say, we need to start working together. Just like in our industry, gone have to be the days of, okay, that guy down the road, I'm going to undercut him by 10 bucks a foot so I can get the job. It needs to be, look, you deal with water, we deal with water, we can work together. You don't want to take us over, we don't want to take you over, but we have to work together. Otherwise, you could be regulated out. And that's the fear that we need to understand and keep in the back of our mind, that, look, you don't get involved, you're not the professional, you don't speak up for industry, you may get regulated out. Long pipe is an answer for a lot of people that don't understand our industry. Unfortunately, it's a money issue. They see income dollars for cities. We're going to expand out here. You're going to get long pipe. It's like, it doesn't make sense. We can do it this way. You'll still get your tax dollar. But for them, it's a separate mindset, and we can deal with that. That's a whole other conversation as well.
You're correct. You know, it's 85% of our population in this country is on some sort of municipality.
Yeah.
You know, and so that means 85% of our voting population,
yep,
only understands municipal water.
So that's,
it's
correct,
very easy for us to see something get passed through where we didn't have enough good advocation. And that's very important to everything you're talking about here. You know, you've said it best, Dave, better together. You know, yeah. That's what we have to do in order to progress our industry.
To be better together. That's correct. And I would be happy to talk about this or anything else when we're down in Vegas together. You can find me out. You can have somebody from NGWA page me. If you got my cell phone, text me. I'd be happy to sit and talk with anybody. You can email me. I got the NGWA email. I'll be happy to talk to anybody about anything about groundwater.
And please do. Dave's got a great perspective and has been doing this a long time and is one of our greatest advocates. And
thank you, Ron. Appreciate that.
You know, because we're drilling, because we're out doing that, it is hard for us to be doing that and managing all that Dave does for seven states. And that's the value, you know, as we learn the nuances of what it takes to punch through that confining layer. You know, Dave knows the nuances on how to get us back into Frankenmuth and planning a great show for us all to be together at.
No, thank you very much. I appreciate that, Brock.
Well, thank you. Thank you for your time. I hope you get out there and you get another nice trophy like the ones on the back wall there. 1 week, we'll all be in Las Vegas sharing knowledge, participating in classes, looking at new technology, bringing our industry together. This year, we have the irrigation and ground source geothermal going on, along with our big national groundwater show. Get your book out. Start looking at the classes you want to participate in, from Dave Schulenberg's talk to the talks that Tom Hanna has going on, or Marvin Glockfelty. There's a ton of great talks out there, and we need to figure out where we want to be and how we professionally develop, and we share knowledge. Jeff Williams and Buddy Sebastian will be having a talk on business economics. And next week, I will have a special discussion with them, which will drop Monday just before the National Groundwater. Thank you for joining us for episode 39, brought to you by Derek's Manufacturing. When I asked Derek McLattery, owner of Derek's, how did you get here? He said, I'm a driller first and a designer second. I couldn't build and design without putting the time in on the platform. Everybody, stop by booth 179 and check out those rigs and talk to Team Derek's about how their rigs can impact your business. You might even run into Mike Steffen in the booth, and you two can share knowledge and discuss his 700 hours he just put on a Derek's rig. Again, I want to thank Dave Schulenberg for creating an insightful presentation that can help us all become better together. I know the National Groundwater Show predominantly starts Wednesday and Thursday, but we got a lot of great talks going on Tuesday. And I will be teaching on the IGSPA side at 8 a.m. and 1 p.m. Tuesday, December 6th. Both talks on leadership, the first one on performance review and designing expectations for Gen Z. And the second talk is hiring, retaining, training the next generation of driller. On Wednesday, Dave Bowers and I will be teaching on the trade show floor of the NGWA at 1 p.m. The title, Site Hazards Identification and Tactics. After our class, stop by the driller booth for our happy hour and visit with the driller team, including editor Jeremy Verduzco, writer Dave Bowers, writer of leadership Captain Jake Fletcher, national sales manager Chelsea Yordi, our publisher Mike, and me. Thank you, everyone. Have a great week. And man, it's going to be great to see you in Vegas.